Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the website, you can ask additional questions even about other shows. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've also launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Psychics and mediums seem to be able to connect with the spiritual world at will. And what we can learn from them is both fascinating and helpful because it opens a door to the higher wisdom. Even people with no apparent psychic ability have occasionally contacted the spiritual world, either through dreams or inspiration. The question is there a way for normal, non-psychic people to create the capability to communicate with the spirit world and access higher wisdom? Our show today is titled Spiritual Communication, and our guest is Colleen Morrow, who believes she knows how to do it, and she's here to tell us all about it. In the late 1980s, Colleen Morrow founded Intuition, a magazine for the higher potential of the mind, to introduce readers to the emerging field of intuition development. Intuition was published until the year 2000. In her new book, Spiritual Telepathy, Ancient Teachings to Access the Wisdom of Your Soul, she introduces readers to a more advanced type of spiritual perception called spiritual telepathy. The techniques she introduces come from a body of knowledge called the Ageless Wisdom. She also called the Esoteric and Mystery Teachings. This wisdom was first put into book form by the Hindu sage Patanjali in his classic book, The Yoga Sutras. For her book, The Spiritual Telepathy, Colleen drew on a variety of cultures and spiritual traditions, both ancient and modern, and discussed how science supports these ancient teachings. Colleen Morrow, welcome to the show, Colleen.
Thank you for having me.
You wrote a book, Spiritual Telepathy. Why don't you tell the listeners what telepathy is?
Well, spiritual telepathy is communication from the subtle worlds, from our soul, or from even higher levels. And communication from the subtle worlds is always telepathic. We don't audibly hear the information. It's dropped into our brains where it's formulated into thought.
Okay. Well, why would we want to do this? Why would we want to communicate with the spiritual world? What are the advantages? What are the benefits from it?
Well, the advantages are the higher guidance that we can receive. When I started to study this, I realized that I had hit on a higher level of perception than basic intuition, which we taught through the magazine. And I think of it as a more advanced form of spiritual perception. And some people call it the higher correspondence to our personal intuition. Our personal intuition provides guidance about our day-to-day lives, our relationships, and our work. But the soul, when you make contact with the soul, you hit a higher level. The soul knows our higher purpose and can help us understand the bigger picture. It's really our most reliable source of direction and guidance.
Okay, so this is our own soul. What's the difference between our soul and our personality? Aren't they the same thing?
No, they're not. The okay. Soul is the repository of our many lifetimes of experience. And it's said that the soul puts down a thread, you might call it, into this physical world, which is the human world. And that's the human personality. And we gather experiences through our many lifetimes. And at the end of our evolutionary journey, we start making that path back home, so to speak. So we make conscious contact with the soul.
So what's intuition?
Intuition is the ability to get information beyond the rational mind. And this is an even higher level, because we're getting information from beyond the human world into the subtle worlds.
Is it coming from the soul, or is it coming from spirit guides? Where's it coming from?
It's coming from the soul, and it can come from even higher levels. When we make contact with the soul, we also have access to the universal or divine mind, where information on all subjects can be found, past, present, and future. So the soul is really the portal to the even higher worlds.
Okay, so when we feel something, we feel something inside. Say we're a young engineer and we're sitting, we design some project and we tell the boss, hey, it's ready for or we're thinking about telling the boss it's ready for qual test, and something inside says, well, you really, Dave, you ought to do a preliminary heat test on this thing, and now you have a choice, right? Now as the young engineer, he says, okay, there's something tells me inside my gut that I ought to do a little something else here, or I might just say, the schedule's tight, just tell the boss, hey, I think I'm ready, and we'll go with it, and that's where the free will comes in, and that's where we're getting this word from the soul, I would assume. That's saying you need to do a little bit more work on this thing, and then you're getting the pressures from the day, and you make the decision. Is that kind of how the free will and intuition and the system kind of works together?
Well, I'd say yes and no. There's actually three types of telepathy, and the first and lowest is instinctual or feeling-based telepathy. That's our gut feelings. And the second is mental or mind-to-mind telepathy. And then you have the highest, which is spiritual or soul-to-soul telepathy. And one thing that I found as I researched this is that this is the experience we call genius. And it was very interesting to read this, because one of my favorite books was called Higher Creativity, and it was written by the late Willis Harmon, who was the former president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And in this book, it was written in the 80s, he looked at the biographies of many artists, writers, composers, and scientists, and discovered that their greatest achievements came through an intuitive breakthrough. And before I wrote my book, I read that book again, and I looked at his original sources and started checking those books out at the library. And when I read the full text of these interviews, what I discovered is that many of the people we call geniuses talked about their creative process in exactly the way it's explained in the wisdom teachings, that it's through the soul that they had access to a universal flow of information and inspiration. And this experience has resulted in our greatest scientific breakthroughs. Einstein talked about this a lot, and our most beautiful works of art. One book that was especially interesting was called Talks with Great Composers, and it was written in the late 1800s and not published until the 50s. The author had an agreement with Brahms not to publish until after his death. And in this book, this author interviewed Puccini, Brahms, Strauss, and Wagner about the source of their creative genius. And one thing that I was really riveted by was the consistency of their experience. They each spoke of the soul as a portal to this universal flow of inspiration. And once they made this connection, that the ideas and images that they needed simply flowed into their brains. So the same words were used over and over. I think two of these composers used the word appropriate, that the information is there, the inspiration is there, and they can pull it down and appropriate it for their own use, their own individual use. And these works come from beyond the human world, and they're considered great classics, and they stand the test of time, and they show us a higher level of beauty.
So how do you know if you're thinking your own thought, or you're getting this wisdom that's coming from somewhere else, the spiritual world? How do you know?
That's a great question. And I wondered about that myself. When I first started studying this, excuse me, I thought if I started to get information, it would be like automatic writing or something. You know, I'd be typing, you know, with my eyes closed or something.
Right.
And it doesn't work that way. What happens is that the thoughts just get mixed in with your own thoughts. For example, one chapter of my book has to do with how we prepare. It's called Refining the Physical, Mental, and Emotional Bodies. And as I was writing about how we raise the vibration of the physical body, a thought popped into my head that Qigong and Tai Chi would be a way to do this. And I didn't know anything about this, and it was clearly not my thought. But when I started to study it, I thought, okay, of course it does, because these slow, precise movements of both of these practices put us in harmony with this higher energy, the universal chi, and it made perfect sense when I looked into it. But I didn't have that original thought. That thought was just sort of dropped into my brain. And I had the same kind of experience when I first got the inspiration to start Intuition Magazine. It's quite a story. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This was in late 80s, and I was living in San Francisco, and I had worked in alternative publishing for many years, and I suddenly found myself without a job, and I was trying to figure out what to do. I'd already worked for all the magazines I liked, so I wasn't really sure what my next step would be. And I was very anxious about money. It's a very expensive place to live. And so I thought, I have to get a job pretty soon. And I spent my days talking to editors and looking for new magazines and pretty much driving myself crazy. And one morning I woke up and I decided that I needed a mental health day, that I would give myself one 24-hour period where I wouldn't think about the fact that I was unemployed. It was October. I remember that because it's my favorite month in San Francisco. I went out and bought some bulbs, and I decided that I would just spend the day puttering around in my garden. And as I was planting my bulbs, I had a type of intuitive experience that I'd never had before. A sentence just flashed through my mind, and it was the center for applied intuition. And I have always been a very intuitive person, but information came to me through my feelings or some sort of body-based sensation. But this was a purely mental experience. The words seemed to have been dropped right into my brain, and I knew instantly that it wasn't my thought, and it certainly made no logical sense. I knew about the center, and I had met the founder, but I couldn't imagine why I would go there to look for a magazine job. He had a tiny two-room office, and he ran intuition trainings, and he sent intuitives out to do business consulting and so on. Really made no sense in the context of what I was looking for. So I thought about it for a few days, and I thought, well, what have I got to lose? And I called him up, and I asked him if he would send me information about the center's activities. And a few days later, I got a big manila envelope, excuse me, and when I dumped it out, there were several brochures and a typewritten journal called Applied Psi. And this was the journal that he sent out to the center's 200 members. And it was all about the subjects of intuition and creativity. And as I was flipping through it, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. This could be a real magazine. It'd have to be spiffed up and it'd have to have another name. But I think that a lot of people would be interested in this. So I called him up and asked to talk to him. And when I went over the next week, I explained my idea, and he just lit up and said that he had always dreamed of turning it into a real magazine, but the right person had never come along. So I went home and I created a proposal, came back the next day, and I suddenly found myself launching a new magazine. And so when I think about it now, there's several interesting things about this. One is I never could have gotten there through rational process. It never would have occurred to me to go there if I was looking for a magazine job. And I got something better than actually what I was looking for. I thought I was just going to get another job. And I couldn't have seen then, this was the late 80s, that in the next decade, there would be a flood of information on intuition, and the magazine created a focal point. And so this experience where the information just came to me, that it just dropped into my brain, is a perfect illustration. And the reason I like to tell this story, because it came from somewhere beyond me, and it guided me to just the right opportunity for that time.
Do you think all of genius comes from outside your mind in the spiritual world?
I do. I think it comes from beyond the human. And the reason it's called genius is because it's exceptional in some way. And these people are seen as sort of rare people that have some sort of ability that the rest of us lack. And what was exciting to me about this is to realize that we can all be geniuses, that it's just the process of opening up to these higher levels.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I have no doubt that some of the listeners are going to struggle with the concept of whether they're having their own thoughts or some other being is putting these thoughts into their mind. But you know, if you look at it from my perspective, you know, we're really part of, as you explained earlier, part of a soul. And the soul is a much greater entity than we are. And it's greater because it's a greater mind. It has greater knowledge. It has greater wisdom. And we're really part of that. So indeed the soul is part of a larger, what I call universal consciousness, which is a larger body of knowledge and wisdom. So what we're really doing, it really doesn't make any difference where our thoughts come from. If they come from this little piece of the soul that the soul has decided is our personality, or whether it comes from a larger entity, a thought is a thought. And you know, unlike our society where we patent all our thoughts and everybody that has a thought is supposed to is supposed to own it. In reality, nobody owns any thoughts.
And, that's right.
And so it really doesn't make any difference if it really comes from us. It's not a matter of who we are. It's just a matter of a thought that comes, you know, that comes our way. So I'm not sure I see, you know, I would worry that much about, you know, is it my thought? Is this me or is this somebody helping me? It's really irrelevant. But you could see if you're focused on your personality, you could kind of see where, you know, you could kind of think to yourself, well, gee, you know, who am I and what am I? But, you know, I think, you know, I think it's a fascinating concept that, you know, that these things can pop into your mind. And I think it happens to everybody. I mean, it happened to you. It's happened to me. It's probably happened to everybody. You just don't notice it sometimes. You know, you think, right. Oh, that was a good idea. But it turned out that it wasn't.
Something that I don't think that when we get a thought, it's necessarily from a different being. It's from our own soul. And through that soul, we have access to these universal storehouse of all wisdom and knowledge. It can come from higher beings, but not necessarily. And I think in the early stages, the focus is always on our own soul.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think most of the time it comes from our own soul. Let's go back and talk about some of these telepathies. Let's talk about instinctual. What is the instinctual telepathy?
Well, again, it's feeling-based telepathy. And we share this kind of telepathy with the animal kingdom, and it's still used as a means of communication in indigenous cultures. And when I decided to write this book, I thought about how I could make this information credible to a wider audience than those people that are already reading esoteric books. The source material is very esoteric. So I looked for other ways to back it up. And it was really an interesting journey because I found the same teaching everywhere in so many different cultures. For example, the kahunas, the native priests of Hawaii, believe that telepathic information is sent directly from one solar plexus to the other. And that's what the wisdom teachings teach, that kind of telepathy is centered around the third chakra or solar plexus. So I found it in the kahunas talking about the same thing. The African Bushmen believe that we're all connected through a line of energy that extends from one belly button to the other, and that's how telepathic messages are sent. The Aboriginals believe that it's called the miwi, which is in our stomachs somehow, and that's how they see and hear at a distance. And in Japanese, this type of nonverbal communication is called haraji or belly talk. And in our culture, it's called gut feelings. So I thought, wow, everybody's saying the same thing, that this type of information is really centered around this same area. And so I did this over and over. I looked at how this information really was part of a universal teaching that extends beyond our culture to all cultures and that lies at the heart of all of our spiritual traditions. And it took years of study because I didn't have a background in world religions. But I was really determined to get this information out and to show people that it's not just this woo-woo esoteric stuff, that it really can be found everywhere and that it's really a very important teaching, especially for our times.
It's, you can kind of see it. I mean, we've all watched National Geographic and such like that. And you can, you've seen things, where herds or schools of fish are all heading in one direction. And then all of a sudden, they all change and go in another direction. And something like this, an instinctual telepathy, would explain how that might happen.
Exactly. That's considered mass telepathy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, I mean, how could the guy on the, way over on the left see what the guy way over on the right, 500 animals away or all of a sudden know what to do? And they work as a system. It's amazing. So there are things that, you can tie it into what we see and know and feel. It's amazing concept, really.
Well, the scientific world is also talking about this now. Rupert Sheldrake is one person, and I think that he's done more than anyone else to validate this type of telepathy. He also talks about it as instinctual. He says it's part of our evolutionary heritage, an aspect of our biological animal nature. And he and his associates collected, I think, over 5,000 case histories of this type of telepathy. And he says the same thing, too, that it's feeling-based, that it's stronger with the people that we're closest to, and that it's also strongest in times of heightened emotions, danger and death and so on. And the esoteric teachings say that, too, that it'll get through most easily when we have these heightened states of emotion.
Now, how does it differ from mental telepathy?
Well, you can look at the chakra system and look at it that way, that instinctual telepathy is an area around the solar plexus, and mental telepathy is mind-to-mind telepathy, sort of beyond that instinctual level. And then again, you have the higher level, which is spiritual, which is soul-to-soul telepathy. Yeah. So it shows the progression of our perceptual abilities from the instinct of the caveman to the mental aspect of the modern man, because that was our task, to develop our mental abilities, to the soul-to-soul spiritual, a future man. And so we're right on that doorway now where we're developing this higher level of perception.
Yeah.
I think evolutionary step.
Yeah. I think most people have experienced a form of mental telepathy. If you're sitting in the car with somebody and there may be, two people in the car, there may be six people in the car, and nobody's saying anything, and all of a sudden you're thinking of something, and somebody else all of a sudden starts talking about this same odd thing that has nothing to do with anything else, any other subjects that have been talking about. That's got to be some form of, I would assume, mental telepathy, as it goes one to one. So we've all experienced this one way or the other. Now the question is, how do you cultivate this? One of the things in your book you talked about cultivating an ability to enhance your telepathy, and I guess it enhances all the telepathies. You focus more on the spiritual, but I guess it would enhance the rest of them. Why don't you talk a little bit about what somebody might do to improve their capability?
Well, it's cultivated through meditation, and through a particular type of meditation called creative meditation or Raja Yoga. And this is a meditation that has to do with the mind, and it's a very active type of meditation. That's what I like about it. Excuse me. many meditation practices focus only on quieting the mind. And in this meditation, we go a step farther, and we're actually training the mind to make contact with the soul and to pull in information from the soul. So there's an alignment that happens between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And the information has to reach the brain before we have conscious awareness of it. And it's like the way our homes are wired for telephone and internet connection, This type of meditation allows us to create the threads and cables that link us to the higher worlds. And we do this by projecting our attention upward in meditation to the soul day after day. We imagine the soul as a star about 6 inches above our head. And as we do this every day, we anchor small threads of energy that eventually form a symbolic bridge between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And I found this teaching everywhere too. In the wisdom teachings, it's called the Rainbow Bridge or the Bridge of Light. It's in the Hindu text. It's called the Antahkarana. And I even found it in the Bible. It's called the Straight or Narrow Gate in the New Testament. So we are really extending our attention beyond the human world to these higher levels. So these higher levels, the subtle worlds, then become part of our human world. And once we've established this contact and we've built this bridge through daily meditation, we can really tap these higher levels at will. And that's really, I think, part of the human destiny, to bring heaven to earth, so to speak, and to make contact with these higher worlds and to sort of marry both the spiritual and physical worlds.
Is this actually a physical bridge in the brain?
No, it's considered a symbolic bridge because it's a connection and higher energy than the kind of energy we think about in the human world. It's subtle energy.
Okay. So even in the brain, it's just the way the paths work through energy. It's not something that changes the brain.
Well, it actually does change the brain. And this was a very interesting thing to read about. And science is saying this too now, that when we do a contemplative practice over time, the brain does start to change and it becomes more receptive to subtle currents of information. I think our brains are still evolving, even though it looks like we're at the end of our brain evolution, that they are still evolving and they become, it becomes easier over time to access these higher worlds.
Okay, so there's some physical aspect of this bridge that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's talk a little bit more about this creative meditation. You talk about it as being active to train your mind, and you talk about it focusing on certain things like some God or spiritual world or something along that line. And you seem to say that what we need to do is train our mind to transmit information. Is that what you're saying? We're transmitting maybe a question to the spiritual world, maybe to our soul, whatever. Is that one of the things that we're trying to do with this creative meditation?
I don't think so much that we're transmitting, although that can happen, is that we're creating a pathway so the soul can transmit to us.
Okay, so it's a return because we've already got the capability. I mean, it's one thing to transmit to us, but I assume you ask questions, but maybe that those pathways are already there. So it's just getting the information back. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a two-way street, but in the early stages, it's really going to be more a downward process where we are able to tap into these higher levels and get the information directly.
What's a seed thought? Didn't you come up with?
Yeah, what's certainly not my original thought, but it's a type of practice where in the early stages of this kind of meditation, what we're doing is we're training the mind to stay focused on a particular thought, word, or sentence. And so we're getting the mind under control. So it's our servant rather than our master. And so in this meditation, we'll stay focused on a thought, symbol, or sentence, and we'll train our mind day by day by day to stay focused where we want it to go rather than where it wants it to go. And so that's really the first stage of this meditation, to be able to get control of the mind. It's the longest and most tedious part of this process.
Okay. Now you mentioned 5 stages of creative meditation. What are those?
Well, the first step is concentration or mind control, as I said. The second is actual meditation, which is just prolonged concentration. And then the esoteric books talk about contemplation, illumination, and inspiration. And when we're able to hold our attention at these higher levels, that's when we can be impressed, so to speak, with information from the higher worlds. The brain is impressed with this information. And once the information is impressed, then we have access to this world, that genius experience. And when we use this, then the next stage, illumination, occurs, when we can get conscious contact and get conscious awareness of this higher level of information and then use it in our lives, in our service or in our art or whatever.
Now, another thing that you mentioned in cultivating the spiritual telepathy perception is diet. And you talked a little bit about that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's important about a diet?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question, because this is really the first step in esoteric training. It's called the refinement of our physical, emotional, and mental bodies. And when we are creating this bridge, we have to create a direct line of communication between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And to do this, we need to purify the physical body and quiet our minds and emotions. And any kind of illness, fatigue, and especially mental or emotional static will make it hard for our brains to register these higher levels, these subtle currents of thought. And what I discovered is that this type of refinement is really part of all of our spiritual traditions, even though the methods vary from tradition to tradition. But the goals and requirements are exactly the same: purity of body, control of the emotions, and stability of mind. And the first step is to really raise the vibration of the physical body by taking care of ourselves, by eating right, by getting enough sleep and exercise. And there's really no one size fits all, that we just get more in tune with our body, and intuitively we know what the body needs. And many people find that they give up sugar, some people give up meat. It really depends on what your individual body needs. A lot of people have really strong reactions to alcohol and really cut down any kind of addictive substance, and it starts to just move out of our lives. But that's really the first place, is to start with stabilizing the body, and we're raising the vibration of the body so it more easily matches with the energy of the higher worlds. And the next step would be then to refine or get under control the emotional and mental bodies. And I had a lot of problems with this, and I wrote about it in the book. I figured if it was happening to me, it's going to happen to a lot of people. When we get really serious about quieting ourselves down, it's easy for any unresolved emotional issues to start bubbling up. And Jack Kornfield talks about this a lot, that when he started to teach meditation, he noticed that at least half of his students were unable to master even the basic concentration exercises because they had so many unresolved emotional issues. And that happened to me too. The quieter I got, the easier it was for me to get in touch with all this old stuff. I realized I was walking around with a lot of anger and resentment, and a lot of it was really old. And it got so frustrating to me that I started to work with a spiritual healer named Stephen Lumiere. And he gave me 3 meditations to do every day, one on forgiveness, one on compassion, and one on loving kindness. And I started to do these practices day after day after day. And I started to quiet down, and I did become a more forgiving person. It started to be easier to forgive some of these early betrayals. And as that happened, I just got quieter and quieter, and I was able to meditate deeply. So it's really a process of sort of clearing out the old, and which makes it easier for us to just start to settle down, to quiet down, so we can start to create this bridge, create this channel from the higher worlds that can get through then to the brain.
When you talk about really old, are you talking about in your childhood? Are you talking about past lives, or what are you talking about?
Some was from my childhood. Some was from my earlier life. I 40 years ago, I had a love affair with somebody who was sleeping around, and I didn't know it. And there's a difference between getting over something and really forgiving. And I realized that was still sort of there. My anger at him was still sort of there. So I did this forgiveness work with anybody and everybody that I had any kind of emotional charge with, and it really helped.
Yeah, that's good. One more comment on diet. You say some people give up sweets, some people give up red meat, alcohol, etc. How do you know? What does your body say to you to say, yeah, that's what I need to give up? What do you recognize in your body?
Oh, that's an interesting question. For me, I got headaches every time I ate certain things. And okay. I also just developed an aversion to chewing any kind of flesh. I never was a big meat eater, but I ate chicken and fish. But I got to the point where I just didn't want to chew. I didn't want to chew like that. And I started to back away. And interestingly enough, it can also shift later, that I think our body goes through a period of adjustment when it's being exposed to these higher levels. And so we might have a really strong aversion to something. And as the body starts to balance and settle down, then we can add that back. But your body will tell you what it wants and what it doesn't want. Very clearly.
Okay. So you'll be able to feel this as what you like and how you feel and headaches and aches and so on and so forth.
That's right. Your preferences can change for a while. It can change back. It really depends. But they're very strong signals that you can't miss. I got excruciating headaches when I ate certain things for a while. And as my body started to balance out, then, you know, I could add some things back. But your body definitely tells you.
Okay. Now, the third thing that you already mentioned is calming emotions. And of course, meditation can help that. But you talk a lot about yoga. How does that help?
I don't think I talk about yoga. I mean, it's a body practice that helps the body, but I didn't talk about yoga in the book.
I thought you did.
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Cause that's one of the ways that the world, considers, kind of a stimulus for evolution. And, mm-hmm. I don't know how it works. And I was hoping you knew how it worked to stimulate evolution. But I would think that that's another way to calm and relax the body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like Tai Chi, it's a great, great practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you did talk about planes of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that important to know?
Well, I think it is because it helps really describe the process. It's a pretty esoteric teaching. And the esoteric teachings teach that there are 7 planes of consciousness and that our evolutionary journey extends to the first 5 planes, that we've come to the current level. We've come through 3 planes, the physical, the emotional, and the mental, but we still have a ways to go. There's still these 2 super consciousness planes, these higher planes that extend beyond the physical world. So our human evolution is continuing, and our human evolution does include opening our consciousness to these higher levels and having these higher levels be part of our human experience. So it shows the evolutionary journey.
Yeah. Okay. So what are the other ones? What are the 7? You mentioned physical, emotional, mental. There's the Buddhic.
Yeah, the Buddhic plane, excuse me, which is called the plane of the soul. That's where the soul resides. And when we start to open to that plane, then we have conscious awareness of that plane. And the one higher is the spiritual plane. That's the plane of nirvana. And that's where our spiritual evolution is complete. And the 2 higher planes are the spiritual planes, which are beyond the human comprehension. Those are the spiritual planes that sort of keep our planet in place, so to speak.
You got a lot of this information from some of these, the ancient wisdom, and you talked a lot about the ancient wisdom in the book. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Blavatsky's secret doctrine and Isis Unveiled, I think you mentioned, but that's another Blavatsky book. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about the Bhagavad Gita and then the Yoga Sutras. Are these books that people, average listeners should try to go read and understand?
Well, the Yoga Sutras, definitely. The Secret Doctrine is a really hard book to slog through. I read a lot of the Bailey material too. That's not easy either, but easier than the Secret Doctrine. The one esoteric book that I would really encourage people to read is one of Bailey's books. It's called From Intellect to Intuition. And that talks a lot about this experience. That was my favorite book of her whole collection. And that's a pretty easy read. And it was deeply inspiring to me because it talks about how we can reach beyond the human world to this higher level and how we have this higher mental ability. and we're just starting now to cultivate it. And we know it exists because there's enough people that have told us about it. But these people have always seemed to be special and unique and different from us. Our shamans, our saints, our sages, they talk about this higher world. But one of the things that was inspiring and exciting to me was to realize that these people are just a little ahead of us. They've cultivated something that we can also cultivate, that they're not special, unique, and different from us. They're just a little farther along the path.
Yeah. What was Bailey's book again that you thought that people should read?
From Intellect to Intuition.
From Intellect to Intuition. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think the Bhagavad Gita is a fairly easy book to understand. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Secret Doctrine, I agree with you 100%. It took me 3 reads through that book to figure out what they were talking about.
Yeah, it took me a whole winter to read it. And I did it kind of like homework. I made myself read 30 pages every day, and that's how I got through it. I'm a Californian who moved to Minnesota, and so I've never really experienced a winter before. So it was really sort of the perfect winter project for me.
Yeah. I could see where you could bury yourself into the inside next to the fireplace with the snow going down out there and dive
right.
into it. It's interesting stuff if you can fight your way through it,
mm-hmm.
but it does take a good bit of time. Mm-hmm. You talk about soul alignment. What is it?
Well, that's exactly what we've been talking about. When we create this bridge, we make contact with a soul. And as we strengthen this bridge, then we become what's called a soul-aligned human being, that we're in touch with the soul, that the soul is basically guiding our lives in a very direct way. It always does in a subtle way. It's said that we first make contact with the soul through our conscience, that's these little sort of intuitive messages that we get. But we can develop this ability to contact the soul at will and have this be a major part of our lives.
Okay, so it's really touching the soul and getting and communicating with the soul.
Mm-hmm. At the latest stage, the soul really becomes one with the human personality, and then the human body is used as a vehicle for the soul on earth. And it's said that Jesus is, our best example of this, that he showed us what it's like to be a soul in full manifestation on the earth.
Yeah.
And this was something that I found very interesting, because I've always wondered why our most prominent Christians can seem like our most judgmental and intolerant people. And I realized that these qualities of the soul that Jesus taught, which is forgiveness and unconditional love and tolerance, these are really qualities of the soul. And just going to church doesn't really help us to develop that. It's really an inner process. And so we're not. I mean, if we just go to church and then, you know, we're intolerant and judgmental, we're just getting sort of the outer form and not really the inner experience. And he modeled that inner experience for us. He's the best example we have in the West of a soul-aligned human being.
Yeah. And I guess Buddha was another one that falls into that category.
Yeah, for the East. We sort of each have our examples.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Krishna, but I don't know that much about Krishna. He was in the Bhagavad Gita and such, but I think he existed a long, long time ago,
mm-hmm.
like 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no consensus on when Patanjali lived. Most Western authorities say that he lived probably about 300 years before Christ, but the Hindus give even earlier dates, some even 10,000 years before Christ. Who knows, really? But he was considered the first person to put into book form what had been an oral teaching in the mystery schools in Egypt, Babylon, India. He actually put this knowledge into these steps called the Yoga Sutras.
Yeah.
And Alice Bailey has a book, which is her interpretation of the Yoga Sutras. And that's one of the best ones, too, that I read. That's not the easiest to read, but her interpretation of it really brought it home to me. So I would encourage people to read that book, too. It's called Light of the Soul.
I find the Yoga Sutras, it's all about the interpretation. Some of the other ones aren't so much, but certainly the secret doctrine was written much later, so it's easier to get that. It's not so much interpretation as the sutras. Some of those real old ones, they really really requires, and you're dependent on who interprets that for you.
That's right. And you know who was a big fan of the secret doctrine was Albert Einstein. He was said to have kept a copy on his desk.
Yeah, I've heard that. He also had the Gita on his desk too.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So he was a great example for us. He talked a lot about the information that led to these scientific breakthroughs is coming from a higher level. He says there's a time when the mind takes a higher plane of knowledge, and that all great scientific breakthroughs come from that level. And I thought it was very interesting that after he died, there were studies on his brain to try to understand the source of his genius. And there was some ideas about how his brain was different, but he probably thought it was really funny because he talked about it not as a brain consciousness, but as something that came from beyond that then registered in his brain.
Yeah, I would think they would struggle to find the answers in his by just looking at his physical brain.
Right.
But you know, when you think about when you think about relativity, I mean, it's just not intuitive. You know, to have that all of a sudden pop into your head is rather staggering if you think about it.
That's right. And it came from somewhere beyond. That's where these great achievements come from. You know, and again, these people seem like they're rare beings, but they're not. They're just people that are a little ahead of us that have access to this higher world.
Yeah. You talk about the importance of solitude. Why is solitude important?
Well, Mother Teresa called solitude the language of God. We have to have a way to sort of decompress and stop this sort of constant motion that many of us are in our lives. We have to have this quiet period to be able to hear the voice of the soul, to hear this more subtle current of thought that we can reach. But when we're racing around, we can't.
Yeah. So that's when you would get it. Maybe you'd get it in meditation, or maybe you'd just get it at other times when you weren't driving yourself crazy, and we all seem to have a tendency to do that.
Well, remember my story about the magazine? This is why I like to talk about this, because it's such a great illustration of the experience. I was driving myself crazy. I was talking to editors, you know, looking for magazines. I was determined I was going to get a job before my money ran out. And it wasn't until I stopped and I decided I'm just going to have a day where I don't think about this. And I was just puttering around thinking about nothing and quieting myself down, sort of accidentally. And that's when the information popped into my brain.
Yeah, it's a good point. So why do you think this is all so important? Is there something happening to mankind? Why do you think this is important?
Because I think it's an evolutionary step. I think when we make contact with the soul, we take our first steps into the subtle world, and we cross the boundary from strictly human development to superhuman development. And then again, the subtle world becomes part of our human world. And we're right at that step right now where people are starting to do this. Barbara Marx Hubbard says that we're the crossover generation, that it's sort of our task to lead the way to one stage of our human evolution to the next. And when we make conscious contact with the soul, then everything changes. We lose our sense of separateness and realize that we're part of everyone and everything, that the soul is part of the soul of humanity. So when we make that contact, we realize that we're all interconnected. And you can imagine how the world would change if we had a critical mass of people that have made that shift. And I think we're being forced into it by the problems in our world. When we think about our own individual lives, we can think about how in times of crisis, we go within. If we lose a job, if we have a death, if there's something traumatic in our lives, we start to withdraw and start to try to go within and figure out how to improve our lives. And that collectively, we're being forced into that by all the problems in our world, our ecology, all the terrorism and so on, that we're really being forced to take this step.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you 100%. And you can see it out there. You can see the change, and it seems slow, but it's you know, it's continual. And I think you're absolutely right. I think I think the world is changing, and people are changing. How can people find out what you're up to and what you're doing these days?
Well, my web address is spiritualtelepathy.net, and they can read the introduction to the book there. And there's various links to the Amazon page. I have a new project in the works. I'm not able to talk about it yet because it's a startup, but it will be in action next year, early next year, and people can sign up for my mailing list, and I'll make that announcement.
Okay, great. Colleen, it was great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we're able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.